You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Pride to Detroit podcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. It's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. That's right. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park. Each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams of protein. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offerings. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's promo code POD15 at RighteousFelon.com.
Welcome to the Midweek Mailbag, the Pride of Detroit Q&A podcast. Comes right in the middle of the week, your Wednesday afternoon. We record these 12:30 p.m. Eastern on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit. My name, by the way, is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the producer over at Pride of Detroit. With me, as always, to help answer your pressing Lions questions is, one of these days I'm going to get your intro right and remember your position right off the bat. I think I remember your name. I want to say
it's on the screen.
Managing editor of Pride of Detroit at Eric Schlitt on Twitter. Eric Schlitt is here. Happy Super Bowl week, buddy.
Happy Super Bowl week. I don't know what it's going to take for us to get the names and positions solidified and out correctly on a regular basis. Because it's, we've done like 20 of these. It's been 2 years.
It means so much to you that you write about it on our website, and I feel bad because I didn't return the favor.
No, you did in parentheses. That was nice.
we're constantly reorganizing like the Lions, right? Everyone's shifting titles. Thank you everybody who is joining us live here on twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit. We will do this indefinitely. So if you're listening on the podcast feed, feel free to join us anytime you like, or just listen to us on the podcast. You can catch us anywhere on your podcast platforms that you enjoy. But let's jump into it. I think at this point I can't ignore it anymore, Eric. We're just getting a ton of draft questions at this point. So let's dive headfirst into two of my least favorite offseason topics, which is the NFL draft and trading up in the NFL draft. We had two people ask us about trading up. So let's talk about it. One Pride Go Blue asks, would you use the Minnesota pick from the Hawk trade plus pick number 6 to move up to draft Jalen Carter or Anderson? Rob Jr. also asks, better odds Brett Holmes spends big on a defensive tackle like Daron Payne in free agency or trades up for number 3 to draft Jalen Carter? So let's start with the first one. Let's start with the idea of using one of the Minnesota picks or both of the Minnesota picks if you want to trade up and get either Carter or Anderson. Are you on board with doing something like that?
Yeah, I don't think it would. I think it would cost more than the Minnesota pick. Okay. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
If it was just like 55, yeah. I think you trade up, you get a defensive tackle. Because Carter would be my preferred choice, right? He's exactly what they need. You get the best defensive tackle in the class, and if it only costs you pick 55 to move up to secure him, then that's a win. Even if it was, this year's pick and then next year's third, still think that's pretty close to a win because this is a guy who, the difference between him and the next defensive tackle is pretty significant. It's a pretty big drop off.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I would make that trade if I knew I could get Carter and that was the cost. I don't think I would really even hesitate at that.
And it's interesting because I think you're right. But if you were to look at like the trade chart numbers, like the Lions could actually do it, right? Like they could jump all the way up to like two or three with just that 55 pick or whatever it is,
right.
the second round pick from Minnesota. But it's always different when you're talking top five, right? Like that you throw the charts out the window when you're talking top five pick because you're in elite blue chip player territory. You're in maybe even quarterback. Like if it's for a quarterback, which I think some people might look at the Lions trading up into the top five and think that's what they're doing. Although I find that highly doubtful that they'll do something like that. Anyway, it's just a special set of circumstances where you have to pay a little bit more.
Especially in a year when the talent's higher, like you pointed out, like last year, it's a little easier to make a trade to move up than it will be this year. More quarterbacks, higher level defensive talent at the very top. And so it's the charts are fine and they're nice to have. They're good resources, but like most things in the NFL, they're not definitive and, right. you know, end all be all.
Yeah. But even putting all that aside, I'm not as averse to this idea as you may expect, especially if it doesn't cost that second first round pick. Like if we're talking that second round pick and maybe a third or next year's third or whatever it takes, like something a little bit on like that second already feels like a little bit of a luxury, right? You got in TJ Hockenson trade, a player that might have not even been on the roster in 2023 anyways, given what the cap hit he was about to have. And so you're playing a little bit with house money there. And so to get an elite prospect at maybe your biggest position of need,
right?
I'm open to that. I'm open to that. And I don't think Jalen Carter falls, and I don't think Will Anderson falls either. So if you want to get that guy, you go get him. Like, I guess I'm not, and I know this goes against a lot of things I've said in the past where, you know, you don't want to fall in love with one guy. You don't want to trade up in general. It's bad. It's bad strategy in general. The only kind of proven method in the NFL draft is to maximize your opportunities, and to do that, you trade down, not up. But at the same time, the Lions are getting close to like looking across the roster and you're like, there aren't that many needs anymore.
As far as big needs. Yeah. Right. Like they have a handful of like big needs, and then there's going to be a whole plethora of like minor needs that they're going to need to fill out things. The second part of that question though, what's more likely spending on Jerron Payne or trading up to three? I think if you go off Brad Holmes' history, it's trading up,
right?
Because we've seen him do that.
Yeah.
And we haven't really seen him spend. Will that change as the roster is becoming more solidified? I don't know. You know, I know Payne is a special talent, but you're going to be paying him a ton of money.
Yep.
And so if I'm guessing what Brad Holmes does, I would guess Brad Holmes would trade up and try and secure the pillar of a young defense, that because that's what history has shown us.
Yeah. That was exactly going to be my second point, is like, if you look at track record here, Brad Holmes has not been scared to go get his guy. And I know he really only has one major example of it with Jameson Williams, but watching those behind the scenes videos, he almost did it. You know, the reports that he almost did it for a receiver, maybe Ja'Marr Chase in 2021, and then almost did it for Penei, right?
And almost did it for Levi.
So yeah, I mean, that shows kind of the
he's willing to entertain.
Yes.
Anything, and he's willing to move up if he needs to.
Right.
So,
which remains my biggest my biggest concern for him. Like, I did, like, let's calm it down. You're going to get a good player at six. You're going to get a good player at 18. Let's not go crazy.
It really, I mean, like when you have a general manager whose back history is in the draft, he understands value at a level that we just don't.
Yeah.
Like that's just because that's what his whole career was immersed around. Right. And so he goes into the draft And when you talk to him, like, after, you kind of realize this, but he goes into the draft with an idea of, like, where he thinks everyone is going to go. He's very pretty accurate.
He's been very good at that. I mean, Amon-Ra is the perfect example, right?
Right. Yeah. Because he knew it on day two. He was like, he's going to be there.
Yeah. Which is, incredible foresight and maybe a little bit of luck. I mean, you can't possibly know what all 31 other teams are going to do, but he was a guy that they very clearly had circled. And somehow got him on day three. So I think that is a borderline elite trait of what Brad Holmes has done so far. And maybe something that goes, I know you've said it multiple times, but it's something that goes overlooked, I think, a lot, much like John Kaminsky.
I don't think anything's overlooked more than John Kaminsky.
All right. Let's move on to a non-draft question. I like this question. It's kind of a unique one from Nate Simmons on Twitter. He asks, What is a package on offense or defense you would want to see you would like to see more of? What personnel package? Let's start there. There's actually a two-part question here, but let's start there. Because for me, I've been knocking down the door for some two running back sets forever. And the Lions have/had two talented running backs really for a while now. But at the same time, I don't think I can argue about anything that happened on offense last year. So I think they were utilizing their receivers, their skill position players pretty much to ideal results last year. So I don't know. Is there something on offense or on defense that you're like, let me see more of that? I want to see more of that.
Yeah. I think really the two running back set has always been a thing that I've longed for more of. You know, the whole three safety set is kind of going away because teams are, you know, moving guys into hybrid positions where your third safety is also your third corner. You know what I mean?
Right.
And these players are becoming extremely valuable in the modern day defenses. And so I think that kind of idea is slowly dissipating. As far as the edge rushers, I think that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well. Like, they use four edge in NASCAR sets. They'll use three when they want to go to like a 5-2 against a running team. Yeah. So we see a lot of variations of edge rushers. And so a lot on defense, you're starting to see a lot of nuances just in how the modern game has changed, but it's really all about matchups. And when you have a dynamic player like Swift if they draft another dynamic running back, like being able to get two dynamic players who are, you know, positionally versatile, getting them on the field creates opportunities. And that's, you know, we saw Amon-Ra go in the backfield a couple of times. You'll maybe see more of that. Yep. Like, I always hope to see whenever I go to a game, I'm always hoping to see something creative on offense because that's really what wins, you know, games for you.
More Penei Sewell in motion. How about that? Was it Lane Johnson who started that with the Eagles last year? And people were like, this is unfair. This guy is just murdering people while he's in motion. Honestly, I love seeing that sort of stuff. And I know that requires you to put another offensive tackle out on the field, and I don't know who on the Lions you can trust in that position right now, but I mean, it's not just about him going out there and catching a ball once every 15 games. Him as a lead blocker moving at full speed like that is dangerous. It is downright dangerous and lethal for your run game. So yeah, give me more of that.
Yeah. They got three linemen who, when they pull, it can just create some devastating results. And so it's a lot of fun, which is, you know, why I love Hank Fraley so much.
And Ben Johnson.
And Hank Fraley.
All right. Let's go back to the draft here. Eric Emmons asks, besides cornerback and defensive line help, what is the most likely position the Lions draft in the first round? And I think this is a great question because I feel like, you look at basically every mock. I mean, you're the one that's been scouring mock drafts for the past 10 weeks or so. And it feels like pretty much every pick falls under those two categories. And if they don't, people get mad. because it's tight end or it's running back and people get very angry. So, I mean, you can have those in play if you want tight end, running back. But if it was up to you, outside of corner, outside of defensive line, where are the Lions getting help in the first round?
It's a hard question because, you know, you can argue positional value for tight end, running back, guard, which is, you know, there are three big things. You can also argue it for linebacker.
Yeah.
I think the one position that's not a defensive lineman and not a corner that you can also get positional value from is
wide receiver,
cornerback.
Quarterback.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate saying it. Yeah. But if you're taking defensive line and secondary players off the table, positional value in the first round is a quarterback
and wide receiver.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know if there's a guy.
You've already got a lot invested there, right? Like, in my opinion, they have a much bigger need to take a guard or a running back in the first round than they do to take a quarterback.
Sure.
But from a positional value standpoint,
yeah,
that's the next biggest value that you can get. That's not a need that's filled, like, because they don't need a tackle, right? They don't, like, those are awfully popular. Guards less so.
Are you saying we're not trading Taylor Decker?
Jeez. I felt like we could have gone a whole year without you having said that.
I reset the counter. We're back at zero.
I think that conversation has really died down, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And maybe it'll pop back up when people start seeing this cap hit.
And at some point you do prepare for the future, but offensive tackle is also a position you can play until you're 35.
Yeah. And you can also use picks like down the road. Like, yeah, you don't, it's not a position you have to address right now. Right. Guard might be, you know, and so maybe guard is a bigger need, but if we're talking straight value, and I can't pick a lineman, defensive lineman or a secondary player, then that's where it goes.
Let me twist your arm a little bit more on the wide receiver thing, because let's say the Lions don't re-sign DJ Chark.
Sure.
And they're not in a bad position then necessarily. I mean, you still have a lot of guys under contract, including Quintus Cephas, but J-Mo, obviously you have Amon-Ra, you have Josh Reynolds, mm-hmm, Quintez, Khalif, all these guys are still under contract. So you're not devoid of a, you know, players that can play this year, but mm-hmm, how many outside of Jameson and Amon-Ra, none of those guys are necessarily long-term pieces. And again, like, mm-hmm, I always want to reiterate, you're not necessarily drafting to fill needs in the immediate. You're trying to build a team down the road. So would wide receiver be a crazy thing to do at 18?
In my opinion, the way that this kind of wide receiver class is shaping up, I don't know if I'm sold that there's like a definitive guy that's like going to be that he would be that big of an upgrade. Now, look, if Jordan Addison from USC is there, that's great value. I think at 18, that would be really good value for him. He's a slot vertical threat, so he can play the Y, but you're going to have to move him inside, which means you're going to move Amon-Ra around a little bit more. And so, yeah, I mean, you could sell me on him coming to the team. You could, you know, a lot of people are probably, you know, screaming about Quentin Johnson from TCU, you know, the big 6'4 X, right? And that makes a lot of sense positionally as well. Is he worth 18? Like, I know people were talking about, is he worth six? Like, they were really high on him. He can be very, very good, but like, he's not a top 10 guy, in my opinion. Could he be 18? Yeah, maybe. But like, I think you got to look at, like, it's not, there's no J-Mo. J-Mo would be the number one receiver in this class, like, without a doubt. He probably was the one, number one last year too, in last year's class.
Oh boy.
But like, this is not like last year where you had five guys who were like loaded right at the top. And the year before there was four guys that were like loaded, right?
Yeah.
This isn't like that this year. There's a lot of value, but it's not early. There's a couple of guys, probably maybe three that go in the first round. But in my opinion, they might all go in the back half of the first round.
So philosophically, you don't necessarily have an objection to it, but in terms of just availability this year, probably not.
Yeah. Year. Like, if you're telling me I could have Jordan Addison or Anthony Richardson, and you think that Richardson is going to be like the, if you think he's going to pan out,
yeah,
then you're, I'm going to take Richardson. You know what I mean? Like, because I think the value for that position is just higher. Now, I still think Richardson's a coin flip. You know what I mean? Right. Like, he's very talented.
Okay. So Osiris Torrance, Anthony Richardson, or Jordan Addison?
Well, again, it would probably be Richardson because of the value and the potential upside of what he brings. I think Addison's probably more the sure thing, whereas Richardson has the higher ceiling. And I think the positional value on O'Torrence is just, it's a little bit lower. Like I said this before, you would have to be sold that he's the next Frank Ragnow to take him at 18.
Right.
Like, that's the level of player that you're expecting him to, and if you think he is, take him.
Yeah.
And if you're not so sure, take the next guy on day two.
I am thrilled that you have come around, and maybe this isn't coming around. Maybe you've always been this way, but in terms of positional value mattering so much in the draft.
It does. At the same time, my perception of positional value is a little bit skewed from yours. I'm not as against taking a running back like on day two, because I've seen what happens when you get stuck with the wrong running back on day three.
What happens when you take the wrong one in round two over and over again here.
Yeah, those GMs were different, right?
this one hasn't done it yet.
This one has not. But if you look back at like his influences and stuff, you never know. It might come.
It's true. It's true.
It might be an option. So positional value is there. But I think that running back position, I got a feeling you got to brace yourself for that potentially happening this year. They're five picks, man. Running back a top five need? If it is.
What I got from this segment, Eric is done with Jared Goff and wants Anthony Richardson at 18. And with that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more of your Lions questions here on the Midweek Mailbag as we get into Super Bowl week and beyond. We'll be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Midweek Mailbag here again, Super Bowl week, just a few days away. But let's get back to some more Lions talk, more of your Lions questions, and we'll go. We'll talk a little Jeff Okuda. We had a question about Jeff Okuda in our live Twitch audience, and seems timely since on Tuesday evening, I believe it was, the fifth-year option amounts were revealed. And because Okuda hasn't made any Pro Bowls, because he hasn't reached the 75% playing time over two of his first 3 years, he is at the lowest possible fifth-year option total for 2024. He is already under contract for 2023 at $11.5 million is what it would cost. And it's a fully guaranteed deal, which is important. And so the question here is simply yes or no on Jeff Okuda's fifth-year option.
I think it's a hard question because you have to look at if he's not going to be long for the roster, is that contract tradable, right? And I'm not sure it is. And if the contract isn't tradable, then they're probably better served passing on it and allowing him to play out his contract this season, and then seeing how his performance impacts his future. He came back from a really difficult injury. He performed well. He changed his game at the midpoint of the season to become more run defense oriented. He had a couple really good games there in the middle. Then at the end of the season, he's dealing with the illness, and then he gets benched. But is he benched? And then he kind of looks like he's benched, and then he gets an elbow injury, and so like. It leaves you a bit perplexed on how the coaching staff views him, but it doesn't look overly optimistic. Publicly, they said that, you know, he's right where they expected him to be. But again, this staff isn't in the business of publicly throwing players under the bus. So,
and they didn't draft him.
So it sure looks like he's a guy where it's unclear if he's part of the future. And if it's unclear, then you probably pass it by.
Yeah, it's interesting because the fifth year option changed recently. It became fully guaranteed. They changed the way they calculate it as well. And it was a move to protect players, right? That fifth year option, you can't give the player a fifth year option and then revoke it anymore because it's all guaranteed. You're essentially writing a check that for a player that's not on your team. I almost think it's starting to have the opposite effect because there's far less incentive now for teams to give those players those fifth year options because there's no pressure. There's just no, I mean, the Lions have Jeff Okuda under contract for 2023. So why not use that extra information of what happens during 2023 to make your decision on his future? And I know sometimes it is nice to have that extra year to consider it and have them locked down. But with a lot of these players, they're young. I mean, most of these players, they're young in their development. And 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 million are some of these fifth year options. Those aren't deals. Those aren't rookie deals anymore. Those are expensive contracts. And so I don't really see any motivation on the Lions' part for giving him this fifth year option. And hopefully it doesn't sour relationships with Jeff Okuda. Hopefully he uses that more as a chip on his shoulder to motivate and play well in 2023. But I don't really see any motivation to make this move for the Lions, and it's unfortunate. I'd like to be in a position where giving Jeff Okuda 10-11 million a year is great. It's viewed as a great value for the guy, but it's just not right now. And unfortunately, you're paying that for him this year too, right? He's at what, 10-2, 10-3?
His exact number is it's 10.66, so basically 10.7.
So he's
and that's fully guaranteed too.
Right. And so there's nothing you can really do about that this year. But at this point, I don't really know how you can justify doing that. And it does kind of bring up questions like, is the changes for the fifth year option, was that an actually good move? Or is it now incentivizing teams to move on from players potentially a little bit more or a little earlier than maybe they would have?
It's an interesting thing, like, because in that draft class, Joe Burrow went one. He's made one Pro Bowl. And so Joe Burrow is going to cost, because he plays quarterback and because of the Pro Bowl, he's going to cost $29.5 million to keep for that fifth year option, right? Chase Young, who's same thing, made one Pro Bowl,
He's going to cost 17.5. So Okuda, who went third, is 11.5. That's a pretty significant drop. And then like Andrew Thomas, who's met the playing time, who went fourth, he's going to make over 14. And then Tua, who hasn't made a Pro Bowl but has met the playing time incentives, he's going to make 23, right? So Okuda actually is on the very low end.
Yeah.
He actually makes the same as the Dolphins. Geez, I'm going to murder his name, but that Noah.
Igbinogheni.
Yeah, thank you. Who went 30th, yeah. Right? They're going to make the same price. Okuda went three, he went 30. So yeah. Like that, I think what they were trying to do when they were with this system is they were trying to create that balance of this is what you've earned. And so you should be able to make it. And or this is what it's going to, you know, cost for you to get there. So, but about half of the guys on this, in that draft in that first round, either met playing times or at least made one Pro Bowl. So they're going to be in the upper echelon of pay.
Right.
The other half are probably right in that basic level, but that also matches up with the fact that a little less than 60% of the fifth round options get picked up on a yearly basis now.
Yeah.
Right. So I expect him to be in that 40% that doesn't get picked up and not in the 60%. That's and, you know, we'll see where it goes. Cause it's not the end of the road, but I think the Players Association looked at it as, yeah, he won't get that big money, but now he enters free agency. Maybe he can get big money that way. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
So
that's true. But I'm with you there. I think the Lions probably pass on that option, and they have until May 1st. Is that right? Or somewhere around that.
Yeah. The Monday following the draft. And again, that's purposeful because they're allowing teams to see what you can do in the draft. Yep. And if you're planning on taking a corner and then it doesn't fall that way, then you've got the option to go back to Okuda if you need to.
All right. Next question comes from Twitter. Robert Brodeur asks, to your knowledge, were there any significant practice changes that were made prior to the 8-2 finish to last season? I'll start with this one. Part of it is we don't know for sure, right? We don't get to really see practice as on a daily basis. All we get to see is warmups for 15 minutes. But I will say I think Dan was asked that several times, like, are you going to do anything to change your practice style? And the one thing that at least I can recall him saying is that more one-on-ones. He wants more one-on-ones. He wants more competitive, you know, one-on-one sessions that really bring out the basis of what football is, which is winning your one-on-ones. And that was kind of the mantra down the stretch, is everyone needs to win in their one-on-ones and we'll be fine. Is just pay attention to the guy in front of you. Don't do too much. Win your one-on-ones and we're going to be fine. And so that... It's something that they did during training camp too. It's really both years is that competitive nature is to bring out that competitive nature with those one-on-ones. And yeah, I'm sure there were other things. Like, I know after the Carolina game, he's like, we got to pad up. We got to be physical again. And obviously you only have a certain amount of padded practices per year. So it's not like they could just throw in the pads every day. After one and six start and be like, all right, we're going to be a more physical team. But yeah, I think that was one of their major focuses, just bring on that competitive nature with those one-on-ones.
Yeah. I do think the padded practices, the way they were utilized, does kind of paint a picture though, because they did go back to the padded practices after the players only meeting, after coming out of the bye. Like that was,
yep.
They talked about Campbell talked about that as being something that he needed to do to kind of help reset where the team was.
Right.
And then I don't know this for certain, but I believe they probably had to use a couple more earlier than they wanted to.
Yeah.
Which is why they didn't have when they got to like 3 weeks left in the season, they only had one left. And so then they, you know, maybe if they would have had another one, maybe they could have used one in front of Carolina, and that might have helped them with preparation, or who knows, right? But they had one left. They saved it for Chicago on purpose because they knew that was going to be a physical running type game. And so knowing where you can use him and how to use him and when to use him, like those are things that this coaching staff is learning and hopefully will carry into next season and future seasons.
All right, let's move to our live Twitch audience here. Drone asks, does Lions money currently spent on the offensive line stop them from looking at a potential free agent guard? Now, looking at positional spending right now, as of right now, the Lions are third for the 2023 season in spending on the offensive line. So do you think maybe that says to them, all right, we need to maybe pull back on the spending there in order to either fill this need through the draft, get a stopgap guy or what?
No, I think it really hinges on Vitae because he's eating up a big chunk of that money that is boosting that cost up, right? We've talked about the fact that he's probably not worth 12.5, right? This is where he is based on the way things have played out. And if he was willing to take a lower number then I think they'd be happy to roll with what they have from a cost perspective. But if they're not happy with the cost and he's not willing to renegotiate a contract, I could easily see them saying, okay, Vitae is not going to be with us. We might lose Evan Brown in free agency. We don't know where Tommy Kramer is with his back status. We're going to have to invest in the draft. And I could easily see them, going that route. Now, would they go that route in free agency? I don't know, because if you're cutting a $12.5 million guard and you're only freeing up six, are you going to spend like eight on another guard? You know what I mean?
Then
like,
you're not saving any money, right?
You're not. Yeah, you're actually overspending now to replace him with somebody else. And so that's what kind of is where I'm cautious, I'm a bit hesitant, I should say, with them saying that they're going to go and try and secure a guard in free agency. I think they'd be more inclined to re-up in the draft.
I've got 2 points I want to make. One is a point about the salary cap and how much spending they're going to be using on the offensive line. The other is a wild free agency scenario that I know is going to get you excited. And I've already seen some other people think about this potential scenario. First is, I feel like draft is the correct route to go here because you're about to pay Jonah Jackson a whole lot too.
Yeah.
And eventually you're also going to pay Penei Sewell a whole bunch of money in 2 years down the line. So try to stay young there, try to stay cheap there as long as you possibly can, because you're going to be writing some massive checks on the offensive line very, very soon. And you kind of already are with Frank and Taylor. So to spend on a free agent, especially a long-term free agent, seems like a tricky move, but if you look across the league, there is a certain player who could potentially be a cap casualty that I think a lot of people would like to bring home.
Is it Graham Glasgow?
It certainly is.
Yeah. Bring him home. He's one of my favorite players to ever don the uniform. Guard, center, versatile. He's an extremely underrated player, in my opinion. He fits the system. He's athletic. I would be on board for that without hesitation.
I'm glad you were ahead of me on that one.
Oh, yeah. Would I cut Vitae and then spend $8 million on Glasgow? Yes. I would.
Okay. For how long though? Like, I don't know
three or 4 years.
So, okay. You're spending.
I don't mind spending on Graham because I know he's good.
And I can say for a fact, I know he would love to be back. I'm not saying that he wants out and wants to be in Detroit, but listen, he streams on Twitch. We talk a little bit about it. And every now and then he's mentioned several times how much he misses some of the guys here. So culture fit for sure. Good, really good player. I mean, if you're concerned about losing out on Evan Brown, having Graham come in and potentially, like you said, play center if you need him, but mostly play that guard position. And Lord knows he'd be a lot more happy with this regime than the previous one.
Yeah. Look, I'm on board with Graham. I would say go after him if you can. On the flip side, if you are going to draft a guard, I want you to kind of look at what the investment is and when the contracts expire on the offensive line. This season, Jonah Jackson is under contract, okay? Or his contract expires, yep, and he'll need to be renewed. At the end of next season, it's Taylor Decker. At the end of the season after that, it's Panay. Okay. At the end of the season after that, it's Frank. They're spread out for a reason,
yeah,
right? Like, it's do you remember what happened to the wide receiver group when all their contracts ended in the same year? They were all gone.
Yeah.
Like, they were gone, right?
Yep.
Spreading these contracts out on the offensive line allows you to maintain some stability on the offensive line. It allows you to keep them going in the rotation. If you get another guard this year, you can add him in into that rotation. Now, you're going to have two at the same time, but you can be clever about how you address that 4 years from now.
Sure.
You know, if you're doing like the early signing and stuff like that. So I like the idea of drafting a guard that could potentially start this year. Mm-hmm. If you can get the right guy at the right spot. And right, there's a couple of guys that I think would be that can work with, but having those contracts end in each in separate years allows you to address them appropriately. And with the way that the cap fluctuates, you can gear them to where they're low hits and then ending in high hits. And that way you're right, always keeping some of them lower, right, and then some mid and then some, and you can just keep that rotation going and you keep good players at that position group loaded.
Yeah. That's always been my argument for going into the draft. It's just, it feels like it's the cap conscious thing to do.
Yeah.
And listen, like, when you extend players, that doesn't mean you're automatically always paying more for them, right? Like, theoretically, if they give Jonah an extension this offseason, it could lower his cap hit this year. It's already pretty low. It's what, like 3.4 or something million. It's not a ton. So there's not a lot of room to lower it. But a lot of times in those first couple of years, you get a very big discount. So that if you do, if you're getting towards the end of those Decker contracts and Ragnow contracts, where those are astronomical numbers, you could still be in those low numbers of the extension to do exactly what you did, is just kind of like balance all those contracts so they're not all hitting at the same time. All right. We're going to close things out with one more question here, and it's going to bring us full circle here. We started the podcast talking about trading up. Israeli Lion asks, what are the chances Holmes trades down from 6? And what's the furthest down he would go? This is something we really haven't seen yet, Eric. We haven't seen the Brad Holmes trade down, which I'm fully supportive of what Brad Holmes has done so far. He's proven he can build the team. He's drafted incredibly well. I would love to see a nice little trade down here and there, though.
I do think he could trade down, especially if he's not in love with the quarterback and a quarterback is there and somebody else is, right?
Sure.
I do think they're in a spot where they could make that happen. Because there's going to be four quarterbacks at the top. And if you have four quarterbacks and two defensive players that everybody's in love with and you're picking at 6, then you might hold the key to one of those spots. So if he wants to trade back, I do think it's reasonable. Now, how far would he trade back? I don't know just yet, because I don't know where that kind of like ceiling or where that drop off is, right? I haven't really determined that in like my kind of hierarchy of where this class is. So, you know, if you have a chance at an elite player, you want to stay in that elite range. But how far he will go back, I think a lot depends on his return. What are some other players that he might like? Because look, if he can trade back and get a first next year, he'll do that. Like, even if it means trading back, like quite a bit, like, yeah, you know, I mean, like past 18, maybe into like the 20s, 30. Like he'll trade that far back if he's going to get a first next year, because it's going to give him flexibility to be in the quarterback talk again next year if he needs to be.
Right.
Right. And so he's going to want that flexibility. And I don't think having pick 18, he has the opportunity to be a bit more loose with the draft picks than if you only have like one pick. Right. So I do think trade down is an option. I don't know how far down. I think everything is going to be on the table for him this year because of where they're at and with the way that the class is.
Yeah, and I think the reason why this is starting to become a bigger thing with Lion Chance, other than it just being good strategy to trade down and always, you know, better in mind than easier in practice. But you look at how we expect the draft to fall right now, and of course that could change drastically in the next 2 or 3 months, but you don't expect Jalen Carter to be there. You don't expect Will Anderson to be there. And then you expect a couple quarterbacks to go. And then what happens after that? Well, there's no clear consensus, right? There's no clear consensus on who's the best corner in the draft. There's a ton of differing opinions there. And I've seen a lot of Lions fans be like, well, they're all interchangeable, right? There's 3 or 4 guys at corner that are interchangeable. So trade down from 6 and you get a guy of the same value there at 15 or 20 or whatever. And maybe there's truth to that. But my counter to that would be, I don't think that's how front offices are actually going to view.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. I think they're going to have a favorite. I think most do have a favorite. And when you have such a big need at corner and defensive tackle and all those things, you want to get the best guy. Especially when you got the 6th overall pick, like get your best guy at your biggest position in need. Don't wait for your 2nd or 3rd or 4th, 5th choice if your first choice is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they have him on, you know, similar level, similar tier, same tier, whatever. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be likely that there are 3 or 4 or 5 guys that are literally all on the same tier, especially at corner. Maybe a defensive tackle as well. I don't know. I think you're always, when you're in a position to get a top 10 pick already and get an elite guy on a side of the ball where you need elite talent still, you only have 1 or maybe 2 blue chip players on defense. I don't know if you want to mess around with that and wait till 20 or 15 to get your guy. Get your talented guy.
I'm with you. One corner might be higher on one team's draft board as opposed to a Lions draft board too, which is, and when you look at the rankings throughout the draft season, these rankers are going to rank for all 32. They're not just ranking for your specific team. Yep. Right. And so Brant Holmes' draft board is going to look very different than Dane Brugler, who is incredible. You know what I mean? Yep. And he's one of the guys that like, I take his word over almost anybody else when it comes to the draft, but he's not going to have the same order, not even at the top that Brant Holmes is going to. And it's not realistic to think that. And so, yeah, you might think the top 3 corners are interchangeable, but in my mind, I have a clear separation between the top guy and who I think is the 2nd guy. And from a talent perspective, maybe they're really close, but then there's all these other intangibles that go into it. So I'm with you. I think they're going to have a very clear hierarchy of where it's going to be. And we'll do our best to guess it. Right.
Yep.
That's the job.
Only 3 more months until we find out what that is. But until then, we're going to get out of here. Thank you all for listening. We will have more podcasts coming your way this week, including a very special one that we'll be recording live Friday at 4 p.m. on our Twitch channel. You're going to want to be there. I promise you that. Maybe something even before then. But for Eric, for myself, thank you all for joining the Midweek Mailbag. We'll be back again next week around this time, Wednesday afternoons, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit. But until then, thank you all for watching. Thank you all for listening. It's Cass. Be kind. Thank you.
more to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.